Today is Thursday, February 8th. We're going to work on hard information today.
This is 17, 18, 20.
So we didn't get very far with the heart last week, so we basically did just a little bit of an anatomy intro. So today we're going to pick back up with that. On page 36, we're going to look at the heart chambers. And there are four heart chambers and four heart valves. The heart is actually meant to be a high-pressure pump. It's meant to distribute blood out to the body. And in order to create high pressure, we have to have pumping chambers, and we also have to have valves that can close to prevent backflow of blood. So some organisms have what's called a two-chambered heart. Some have a three-chambered heart. But we're, you know, pretty sophisticated with our four-chambered heart. It allows for us to keep oxygenated blood on the left side separated from deoxygenated blood on the right side. Okay, so that is something that not all animals have. Some animals actually have their blood mix in the heart chambers. So what are the two superior chambers called? Good, right and left atrium. And I just want to emphasize atrium, I-U-M, is a single chamber. That is what you call the right or the left chamber, right atrium or left atrium. If you're talking about the two chambers together in the plural form, then what should we say?
Atria.
Atria, good. Just want to caution you about that for lab tests, you know, not to put down right atria, to put down right atrium, okay?
Too late,
that's right. Been there, done that. These two atria are really thin-walled. They're basically what we call receiving chambers. They're going to receive blood that comes back to the heart from different locations. Let's take that right atrium for starters. Where does it receive blood from? Good, from the body. Yep, so SVC, which is superior vena cava, IVC, which is inferior vena cava, and one more?
Coronary
sinus. Good. And you guys probably know from lab that that is the piece on the back side of the heart. It actually brings blood back from heart circulation into the right atrium, and you probably saw the little red spot there. That right atrium contains an opening for the coronary sinus. Okay, so right atrium is receiving, is it oxygenated or deoxygenated blood?
Deoxygenated.
Good, deoxygenated. At the very same time, the left atrium is also receiving blood. It is oxygenated and comes from four veins. They are
pulmonary veins.
Good, good. So now's the time to talk about poetry. It is the month of February, right? Okay, so arteries are red, veins are blue. In the heart, there's an exception of two, or you can say in the heart, flip the two. Flip which two? Pulmonary veins and pulmonary arteries. So normally on these models, arteries are colored red and veins are colored blue. But these pulmonary veins are red because why?
They're
oxygenated. Good. And of course, these on top on this model are pulmonary arteries. Good. And they're colored blue because they're deoxygenated. Good. Okay. So, of course, you actually don't have red or blue vessels in your body. That's just on these models to help us keep them straight. But nonetheless, you know, that's a good thing to remember is that these two are reversed in their colors here. All right, so that should take care of those two atria. Let's move down and talk about the two ventricles. Let's see, we've got a larger, more muscular left ventricle, and we have a right ventricle. A little smaller in size, a little less muscular than that left ventricle. So why the difference between those two? Good, left pumps the blood to the body. Good. Where does the right ventricle send blood?
To the lungs.
To the lungs, good. All right, so on your worksheet, I believe you've got a blank there. The left ventricle is larger because you use it to send blood to the body. Need more force. Left ventricle is larger because you send blood to the body from it. You really need that force. So let's just go back and talk about heart muscle for just a minute. The myocardium that makes up the majority of your ventricle walls is, of course, cardiac muscle tissue. It can stretch. It can recoil back like a fresh rubber band to its original shape. It has intercalated discs. Do you remember what kinds of junctions those are?
Gap junctions.
Good. And so what we're trying to do is let those ions flow along the length of these cardiac muscle cells. That way, when your ventricles contract, the muscle contracts together as a unit. We do not want one part of your heart contracting at one speed and another part at another speed. That creates a bowl full of jello, and that can create clots that we then eject out into circulation. We also know the heart muscle tissue is amitotic, meaning what?
It doesn't.
That's it.
Whatever the word is,
repair.
Repair.
That's right.
Couldn't find the word.
You're right, it doesn't undergo mitosis, it can't repair, those cells can't reproduce. So if you damage heart muscle tissue, then
you're in trouble.
That's right. So I just want to make that point because collagen fibers form scar tissue and it does not stretch, nor does it recoil like heart muscle does. Okay, so let's talk about that left ventricle for just a moment. Where does the left ventricle send blood? To the body, and the right ventricle sends blood to the
lungs.
The right ventricle, when it contracts, pumps blood up through a pulmonary semilunar valve, up through a pulmonary trunk, out to pulmonary arteries. Why are they colored blue?
Deoxygenated blood.
And what does that really mean? Good. Those hemoglobins don't have four total oxygens, right? And maybe three or less, right? Okay. And this aortic semilunar valve opens when we eject blood from the left ventricle. We send that up through the aorta, and it's colored red because it's oxygenated. And where does the aorta carry blood? To the body. Good. Okay. So let me introduce that we have two sides here. We have an oxygenated side, and we have a deoxygenated side. Which side of your heart carries oxygenated blood out? The left side. Good. And because we take that blood out to your body is what we call a systemic circuit. Okay. Okay. And then, of course, the right side of your heart carries deoxygenated blood. And that deoxygenated blood goes to your lungs. And that particular side of the heart is what we call a pulmonary circuit. Just checking to see if you have any questions so far. So just to repeat, systemic implies a flow to and from the body. Body is our keyword there. Pulmonary, what is your keyword for that circuit? To the lungs, yeah. So pulmonary lungs, good. So that's our pathway that we're going to follow. Just checking to see if you need this slide. All right, so over on page 37, we're going to talk now about the four heart valves. Keep in mind the goal of the heart is to create high pressure, high enough pressure that you can pump this blood out into the body. You know, the pressure has to be great enough to reach the tips of your toes and to go into, you know, these parts of your brain. So we don't want to lose pressure by the time we get to these faraway points. If you think about a body that is 5 or 6 feet, you know, in length, that's a far way that you have to be able to push that blood. So these valves are never, ever going to be all open at the same time. They take turns opening. There are, in fact, two instances for all four heart valves will be closed at the same time. And basically, it's a timing issue, and we're trying to build pressure, and that's why those heart valves are closed. So we know the two valves located between your atria and your ventricles are called what?
Tricuspid.
Good. AV valves, you can call them tricuspid on the right, bicuspid on the left, or alternately, you can call it right AV valve and left AV valve, okay? So because they are atrioventricular, they are situated between what chambers?
Atria.
Good. Atria and ventricles. Good. They also have strings attached to them. Those are known as?
Chordae
tendinae. Good. And those anchor to muscles down here in the ventricles look like fingers.
Papillary
muscles. Good. So the only place you should see those papillary muscles are down here in the ventricles, and they, along with your chordae tendinae, anchor those AV valves. The reason we call them tri and bicuspid has to do with the number of flaps or cusps on those valves. The right side has how many?
Three.
And the left side?
Two.
Two. Good. Okay, so, you know, thinking about what we're doing here, the right ventricle sends blood out to what body parts?
The
to the lungs. And the left ventricle, really muscular left ventricle, sends blood where?
To
the body. Which side do you think has more pressure?
The left
side. Good. Now, thinking along those lines, which valve do you think has more problems?
Probably the left.
Probably the left. Yep. So that right side has lower pressure. There's less, you know, force hitting back against that valve. But yeah, that left side puts up with a lot of abuse. There's a lot of pressure over there, and that's the one that we typically see problems with. So yeah, left side issues arise from that higher pressure. Okay, so when the two ventricles contract, that is going to cause these papillary muscles down here in the walls of our ventricles to contract. When they contract, they pull down on those chordae tendinae, and the pulling down is going to cause the closure of those AV valves. So it is the contraction of the heart's ventricles that promotes the closure of the valves. When you close those AV valves, the blood in those ventricles will only have one route to escape. Where does blood in the right ventricle escape through?
Pulmonary
semilunar valve, up through that pulmonary trunk. And then on the left side, if we shut that left AV valve or bicuspid valve, now again we have one escape route. Good. Aortic semilunar valve, and of course up through the aorta. Okay, so that's why we have to close those AV valves, is to prevent blood from backflowing into the
atria.
Good. Backflow into the atria, and that way we force it to leave through the pathway that we want it to go through. Okay, so anytime you've got a valve that's not closing properly and you're seeing backflow and spewing of blood, what do you call that? Heart murmur. Heard of a heart murmur before? Okay.
What is mitral valve prolapse when people actually have mitral valve prolapse?
If I can get my video to work, I've got one to show you.
Okay.
Basically, that valve should be standing up proper in the chamber between the, you know, between the left and the right, or sorry, the left atrium and left ventricle.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't have good posture and doesn't stand up properly, mm-hmm. and it starts to sag down into the left ventricle,
mm-hmm.
every time it shuts, it leaves room for blood to spew back up into the left atrium. And so the prolapse is the drooping of that valve. Yep. Okay, let's see. We've got two semilunar valves. Where are they located? Good. Pulmonary trunk and aorta. They have what looks to be like little tiny moons there, the like little semicircular hearts. I think of these as trap doors. You know, if you stand on a trap door, you're going to fall through, right? Otherwise, the trap door stays closed. And that's how these semilunar valves work. They are going to stay closed, and they only open when blood forces through them. And then when there's no more blood forcing through them, they slam back shut. So just like a trap door, they're only open when blood pushes through them. Okay? So again, when the heart contracts and the ventricles are pumping blood, the right ventricle, we see that shutting of the tricuspid valve, and then we see the forcing open of that pulmonary trunk. Likewise, on the left side, when the left ventricle contracts, we slam shut your bicuspid valve, and then now we force open your... Yeah, aortic semilunar valve. Good, good. Okay. Down near the bottom of your page, let's talk about heart circulation through the heart itself. We call this coronary circulation. You know, you guys have been so focused in lab on learning parts of the heart and learning blood vessels that take blood to different parts of the body. We oftentimes forget that the heart is an organ and it needs its own blood. And so that's what this conversation is about. Thinking about the heart, looking at these two big vessels that leave here on the top side, which one of these carries oxygenated blood away? The aorta, good. So if I want to give oxygenated blood to the heart muscle itself, I should tap into that aorta and borrow some of that oxygenated blood. So when we take this cover off, you may have noticed what looks to be two little red stumps there, one on each side. And those are actually coronary arteries branching off of the aorta. They've been tapping into the aorta. They steal a little bit of blood, and then they bring it to nourish the heart muscle itself. Interesting, these arteries are not embedded inside the heart muscle tissue. And it makes sense if you think about why they're not embedded in the heart muscle tissue. What would happen to the blood flow through the artery every time the heart contracted?
Pinched.
Yeah, constrict it, squeeze it, right? So instead, you'll notice these coronary arteries are laid on the surface. That way, when the heart contracts, it's not going to pinch off the blood flow to the heart muscle itself. So on the front side, you see coronary arteries, backside coronary arteries. Probably one of the most important ones is the one that serves which chamber? Left ventricle, right. Okay, so there's a set of vessels that serve down here, and of course, if there's a blockage in those left ventricle arteries, then we have what's called a widowmaker heart attack. So if you've ever heard of a widowmaker, that heart attack is a blockage in those vessels that feed down here to the left ventricle. Okay, so what we're looking at are a set of coronary arteries here. They deliver oxygenated blood to the heart muscle, to that myocardium. The blood drains back in the way of coronary veins. Those coronary veins mostly drain to the back side to this large vessel back here that we called a coronary sinus. Good. So the word sinus just means it's a large vessel. You know, I often think about these sinuses that store mucus, but these are, of course, sinuses too. But nonetheless, it is a vein that dumps blood back into which chamber of your heart?
Right atrium,
good. And even though that right atrium has a little red dot there, that in fact is deoxygenated blood. Okay, so coronary arteries steal blood away from which major vessel?
Aorta.
Aorta, good. And how do we get circulation from the heart? How do we get the blood back into the heart itself?
Coronary sinus.
Coronary sinus, good. Okay. So that is coronary circulation. Sometimes it's called cardiac circulation. But what we mean is this is how we nourish the heart itself with oxygenated blood. Before we leave that topic, I did want to show you this. This is open heart surgery. It is coronary artery bypass grafting. They call it CABG for short. And you have about 9 different major coronary arteries on the front and the back side of the heart. Yeah, it means you can have up to about 9 major blockages in those coronary arteries as well. They may say after having done a heart catheterization, you know, shooting some dye in there,
they may estimate and say, you know, I think we see three or four vessels that look like they're pretty blocked. And they may tell a patient, you're going to go in and have a three-way bypass. After they get in there, they may in fact find more blockages, and it may end up being a five-way bypass. But however many, the number they give you is how many vessels they had to create a new connection from the aorta, bypass that blocked vessel, and then create a new connection so blood can flow to that particular muscle tissue.
And so if they don't actually open the blocked artery, they have to create another.
They may do a stent and they may balloon open that blocked artery if it's under a certain percentage. But yeah, if it's over a certain percentage, somewhere in the 90s, I believe, then yeah, they create a new connection.
So that doesn't create like any potential risk with the blockage just sitting there?
It does, because that blockage can rupture, mm-hmm. and then you could have a heart attack from it. But at that point, they probably got this person on enough drugs, you know, lifetime worth of medications like Plavix and things that prevent clot formation, and things to lower their blood pressure, that probably reduces the risk.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the hope. So they are actually experimenting with some stuff here nowadays. Instead of cutting the patient's chest cavity open and then splaying it, you know, back, they've actually been trying some keyhole surgery. They go between your ribs and then they can do their magic and then they come back out between your ribs. Yeah, so if it's not like a severe number of replacements that need to be made, there are some neat things that they're working on. Do you know where they get the vessels for this bypass grafting? Your legs, yeah. So do you think they take an artery out of your leg, or do you think they take a vein?
A vein.
A vein. Why do you think a vein? That's what carries deoxygenated blood. And if you took an artery, that's carrying...
oxygen.
Yeah, that could be problems, right?
That would be bad.
That would be bad, yeah. They can take leg vessels. I hear they can take arm vessels. They can even take them out of the chest, like to a mammary, you know, workings. So these vessels... What's that?
That's just amazing.
That is amazing. They don't last more than 20 or 30 years because they're taking a vein to replace the job that an artery was doing. So if you've got a person who's 35, that's really young, having a heart bypass, you know, you're looking at 65, 70, this have another one, yeah. So why do you think they don't use, say, other people's vessels or anything else artificial for this process?
Could reject it.
Could reject it, good. So antibodies could bind, they could reject that foreign tissue, and that's not good if you're talking heart muscle and its ability to receive oxygen. Good. All right, that takes us to the bottom of page 37. How about questions so far? How do you feel about blood flow through the heart on page 38? Pretty good. Jackie.
Can you just quickly review the circulation for the heart and the arteries to the sinus? Because I think I got confused between the arteries and the sinus, which is very similar.
On the coronary circulation, basically you come from the aorta, you come out through those coronary arteries. We then branch into capillaries, which we'll learn later. We don't know that flow yet, but we'll get to those capillaries. And then the capillaries do gas exchange. Those blue coronary veins will pick up the deoxygenated blood, and they should dump that into the coronary sinus on the back side.
So the coronary artery is feeding the heart, basically.
Correct.
Once we get, the heart gets all the nutrients from it, what's left over gets dumped into the sinus.
That's right. It's kind of like a washing machine. The good stuff goes out in the arteries, and the drainage comes back in the sinus. Yeah. Would you like me to review page 38, or is that something you feel comfortable with? Wouldn't hurt to review it? Okay. All right. On the test, because this is a circuit or a cycle, be comfortable starting anywhere. Okay, so I may ask you to start at the aorta or the left ventricle or some other spot. But, you know, if you've got this thing down pat, then you can just pick that as your starting point and then just work it all the way through, okay? Don't do what I've had people in the past do, which is try to do it backwards. So wherever the starting point is, just pick that and just keep on working it through that cycle. So let's do that. Let's start with the pulmonary semilunar valve as our starting point. We'll just pick somewhere random. Okay. Where do we go next? Pulmonary trunk to the pulmonary arteries. Good. Okay, so arteries, arterioles, capillaries, venules, veins, and then now you're going to dump back into the... Good. Through the what valve? Down into the... Good. Up through the... Good. Now you're in what vessel?
Aorta.
You go out through arteries, arterioles, capillaries, venules, and veins. Back to the heart. Good. And you have three choices. You can come back in through SVC, IVC, coronary sinus. Good. And that's all deoxygenated blood, and that gets dumped into your right atrium through which valve?
Tricuspid.
Down into the
right ventricle,
up through the
pulmonary
semilunar valve. We're back to our beginning, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so about 20 or 21 structures for that flow.
Now, on the test, do we need to know the deoxygenated and the oxygenated?
You don't have to when you do this. Just write me down a list. Uh-huh. You can bullet point it, but I'll ask you somewhere else,
like where is it?
Yeah.
Like where is the oxygen?
Exactly. So I'll say, you know, I'll give you a list of veins and or vessels, and I'll say, hey, pick me the vein that carries deoxygenated blood. Uh-huh. Yes, yeah, so that'll come back. Do y'all have any other questions on page 38? Stop where you started. It's a pretty awful looking map here. On this first image, you'll notice that there is a map of the U.S. This comes from the CDC, and it shows heart disease death rates. This is a little bit old, 2013 to 2015. But, you know, the South is renowned for heart disease. So you cannot, no. And unfortunately... Yeah, our area here, Florence, Darlington, Marion, looks like Williamsburg counties all have the highest dark red that there is on this map. So, yeah. All that southern cooking. What else do you think might cause this high heart disease? You like to eat what you want to eat, right? What do you think?
We're sedentary.
We're sedentary, yeah. That's Colorado, and you'll notice hardly any red in Colorado. They have said that Colorado is our healthiest state. People have the most outdoor activities, and so, yeah, you're right, sedentary is a big player there. Yeah. So you've got diet, you've got activity. What else might cause heart disease?
Hereditary.
Yep, so some of it we just can't avoid, right? They're learning stuff about how changes in one generation can affect and be inherited by the next generation. So if we eat unhealthy and we have kids, then our kids may unfortunately benefit or not benefit from our lifestyle and our diet. So they're learning that, you know, how you eat and what you eat is actually going to influence the health of the next generation. So, yeah, there may be a large component there that we just don't yet understand. All right, so there's a lot of great resources out there. I did want to tell you that these links are in the D2L announcement right now. There's tons of stuff, like you say, on YouTube, watching videos. There's a lot of great resources out there. I'm going to show you a couple of these as we work through this chapter. All right, so it looks like we're ready for page 39. We're going to talk here about the cardiac conduction system. So what we just finished discussing was how the heart circulates blood to itself. We call that coronary circulation or cardiac circulation. This topic is a conduction system. That's a different word. And this word implies that we are sending nerve impulses throughout the heart. In fact, that's what this is, how the heart controls its own heartbeat. There are two sets of nervous systems that can run the heart's heart rate. One of them is a built-in set of nervous tissue that we call an intrinsic conduction system. There is an override system in case the intrinsic conduction system isn't doing its job or perhaps needs to be sped up or slowed down. The override system is this one called the autonomic nervous system. So let's talk about the intrinsic conduction system first. The heart itself is not just cardiac muscle tissue. It also has nervous tissue woven throughout it. And that nervous tissue can depolarize spontaneously. What does that mean? Depolarize spontaneously. It can send signals by itself. You know, when you learned about the nervous system, what always had to tell something to contract or something to do? Neurotransmitters, right. So interesting that we have heart muscle tissue that says, hey, nervous system, I do what I want to. I tell myself when to beat. So that's in fact what it does. It says, hey, I run this show. I do beat my own drum, right? And do you know how fast that drum beats? Good, 60 on the low end and 100 on the high end, right? And on average, that heart rate is about 75 beats per minute. Okay, so those are some blanks for you. The normal heart rate is 75 beats per minute, and the normal range is 60 to 100 beats per minute. Yeah, 75 is the normal, and then 60 to 100 is your range. You'll notice that for the intrinsic conduction system, you know, the heart decides I'm going to beat on my own terms, you know, I beat at my own pace, that in fact there's a bunch of nervous tissue in there, and the piece that sets the pace is typically called the sinoatrial node, or SA node for short, and we call it the pacemaker because for most of us, it is the one that sets that 75 beat per minute pace. Let's say somebody has a heart attack, and that heart attack damages the area around the sinoatrial node. That sinoatrial node sits in your right atrium, okay? So if your SA node is no longer saying every 75, you know, every minute 75 beats are going to come in from that heart, then there is a number two in charge, and for most of us, that is this atrioventricular node, or AV node for short, and it will set the pace at around 40 to 60 beats per minute. The reason I mention this is because that's a bit slower than what we consider our normal range. What's the bottom end of our normal range? 60. And so if your AV node says, hey, I'm number two in charge and I'll be your pacemaker now since the SA node's not working, and so it may be setting it too slow for what's considered normal. Okay. And so that's when people may need pacemakers. They may even do cardiac ablation, which is they go in and they burn off pieces of tissue. They may allow then that SA node to return and be the one in charge. So when people have heart rate issues, it may in fact be other pieces of nodal tissue that are stepping up and saying, I want to be the pacemaker, let me set the pace. So for most of us, normally that SA node in the right atrium should be the pacemaker. I'll come back to the bottom in just a moment. Okay. So here's your SA node. It is the pacemaker. It is the piece of nervous tissue in your heart that sets the fastest rate. And because it is the fastest rate, it gets to be the winner. If something else was faster than the SA node, then it would be the pacemaker, okay? So the SA node beats the fastest out of all the nervous tissue here, and it sets the pace for the rest of the heart. When it sends a nerve impulse, that nerve impulse travels through a neural connection to the left atrium and into the right atrium. And then those neural connections release acetylcholine. What does acetylcholine tell muscle cells to do?
Contract.
Good. So when the SA node tells those atria to contract, they respond by contracting. When those atria contract, they're going to pump blood down through these open AV valves. Blood from your left atrium flows through bicuspid and drains where?
Into the
ventricle. Blood from the right atrium is going to send down through this valve, tricuspid, and it drains into right ventricle. Good. So when the atria contract, they do so simultaneously, meaning they do it together at the same time. Okay? So they contract, they squeeze. It's not a really hard contraction. The pressure there is fairly low, but nonetheless, it's enough to help force that blood down into those two ventricles. About the time that the blood is arriving at the ventricles, the next in charge, number two in charge, your AV node gets the nerve impulse from the signal sent by your SA node. Okay? So SA node fires. We send messages to your atria to contract. They contract. About that time, your AV node now receives a message. Now it sends a nerve impulse that travels through this bundle right here, kind of at the base of your interventricular septum. We call it the bundle of His. Where'd they get the name from? I don't know. It's probably some guy's name. Okay. There's another name for it. They call it the atrioventricular bundle or the AV bundle. And then some people call it a junction, which you kind of see it's those wires all converging there together. Whatever you call it, it splits. Okay, it splits into what we call bundle branches. You've got them traveling down the interventricular septum, and then they split and they travel up the walls of each ventricle. Those bundle branches will then terminate in little tiny axon terminals, these endings, and we call those Purkinje fibers. And eventually, they release acetylcholine onto these walls of the ventricles, and then what do the ventricles do? They contract. Do you know how long all this takes? Second. Yeah, less than a second. Yep. So this story that takes us 10 minutes to tell
takes seconds,
yeah. So from start to end, to get the atria to contract first and your ventricles to contract second is about 0.8 seconds. Okay? And so that's a really short cycle that we're looking at, 0.8 seconds. That is a number to know. So is 75 beats per minute in the normal range. Those are good to know too. So let's do it one more time. From the top, the pacemaker is your SA node, and it's found in what chamber?
Right atrium.
Right atrium, good. When it sends the nerve impulse travels to your two atria, telling them to
contract.
Good. They contract simultaneously. They pump their blood down into your two ventricles. And about that time, the nerve impulse then reaches your number two in charge, which is AV node. Good. You'll notice it sits at the bottom of the right atrium, close to the interventricular septum. It now sends a nerve impulse that travels down this bundle of His. You can call it AV bundle if you prefer. That bundle splits then into bundle branches. They are in the walls of your interventricular septum. And then what is the next step? Yeah, Purkinje fibers. When those Purkinje fibers release acetylcholine, what do the ventricles do? They contract. Good. And of course, that right ventricle sends blood through what vessel? Pulmonary semilunar valve to the pulmonary trunk. Good. And simultaneously, the left ventricle sends blood through the
aortic semilunar valve.
Good. Aortic semilunar valve to the aorta. Good. Okay, so there's a timing delay here. You want the atria to have an opportunity to contract and send their blood to the ventricles before the ventricles actually contract. So what if your atria contracted and your ventricles didn't have time to fill up with blood before they then contracted? You might be sending blood back and forth between the chambers. Are you pumping out enough blood if you're pumping before you're full?
No.
That's the problem, right? So there is, in fact, the delay between the SA node and the AV node, giving those atria time to dump their blood before those ventricles then fill up and then send out their blood. Okay?
Is that like the refraction period that we talked about in 210?
Kind of like a refraction period, but the delay, it's really kind of a timing delay.
Okay.
And the delay has to be there to let you fill up. Yeah. Okay. So, like I said, 0.8 seconds, that's your timing here. That's a typical cardiac cycle. Doing the math, 0.8 seconds during a minute's time is 75 beats per minute. Yeah, that's a lot of heartbeats per lifetime, right? If you exceed 100 beats per minute, we actually have a name for it. Tachycardia, good. And if you're slower than 60 beats per minute, you're called bradycardia, right. And so either way, you may run into a risk of not delivering enough oxygenated blood to your cells and tissues if you're too fast or too slow. I do want to mention that exercise automatically puts you into tachycardia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you're just sitting here at your desk and you're in tachycardia, that's not exercise, right? And so that's problematic. Likewise, certain people are very well-toned athletes. You know, the Olympics are starting. I love to hear about what their resting heart rates are. 35 and 45 beats per minute. You think, God, they should be dead, you know? But their heart actually hypertrophies. It gets bigger. And then when it contracts, it's boom. You know, it's a big contraction, and it's effective in pumping out that blood. So they can get away with having a slower than normal heart rate. So for a very well-toned athlete, you know, bradycardia may in fact be normal. Some medications like alpha blockers, beta blockers, ACE inhibitors will also put a patient into bradycardia, and that may be normal for that patient as long as they're getting enough what?
Oxygen.
Oxygen, yeah. That's the thing, right? If you're fainting, if you feel lightheaded frequently, then that low heart rate may not be the thing for you. Okay, so we'll come back and talk about those, of course. During the last few minutes, I'd like to take you back through the cycle one more time, and then we're going to hit the bottom of the page with autonomic nervous system briefly. Okay, so what is your pacemaker called? Good. Where is it located? Good. It is the first to fire nerve impulse, telling what chambers to contract first?
Right
and left atria. Good. So SA node fires, it tells right and left atria to contract, and then we tell what next, number two in charge, to send a nerve impulse?
AV node.
AV node number two. It then sends a message through the bundle of His. That bundle splits into what?
Branches,
good. And those branches terminate with Purkinje fibers, good. Okay, and when the Purkinje fibers release acetylcholine, your ventricles now contract. So what chambers contract first?
Atria.
Good, and ventricles do it second. Okay, nonetheless, we still get all those things done in 0.8 seconds. Okay, so from the time an SA node fires to the time it fires again, 0.8 seconds, assuming a resting heart rate of about 75 beats per minute. Okay, so if you are, you know, looking at 40 beats per minute, okay, or if you're looking at 140 beats per minute, are those inside our range?
No.
Those are not. So let's go back to this. If you are outside that normal range, part of your brain will actually detect this because, you know, we've got tattletales sitting in these vessels around the heart. And those tattletales tell the brain they're not pumping like they're supposed to. The pressure's too high. The pressure's too low. We're not getting oxygen. You know, so there's things that can tell your brain that your heart's not beating properly. And then we can turn on one of these override systems. Which branch of your autonomic nervous system will speed up your heart rate? Good. So is that for the heart rate that's 140 or for the heart rate that's 40?
40.
40, yeah. So it tells that heart, hey, pick it up. You're not doing your job, right? So it beats that heart faster to get it up in that normal range. What neurotransmitters work for the sympathetic nervous system? Good. Old buddies, epinephrine and norepinephrine will tell the heart rate to speed up. If you are sitting here at your desk and your heart is racing at 140 beats per minute, we got problems, right? Okay. And so now we're going to override with the autonomic branch called parasympathetic. Okay. And which neurotransmitter tells your heart rate to slow? It's an old friend from 210. Acetylcholine. Good, good. And by the way, the vagus nerve delivers acetylcholine to the heart, and acetylcholine says, hey heart, slow down and beat more slowly. Okay? So the vagus nerve is going to be something we explore again with this chapter. Why don't we pick up here? This is a good place to stop. We'll pick up here and review on Tuesday, and you may want to preview the EKG on page 40 and 41.
Questions over?